This is the February meeting of the Mountain Regional Water Administrative Control Board. I would like to call this to order. Do we have to go into executive session?
We do not.
All right. Does anyone have any questions on the consent agenda? There isn't a check register this week, just a giant purchase order.
Yes, even these aren't here, so we'll double up for next.
Okay. Can I ask about the Jacobs scope of services? So, I know we probably discussed this, but I read through all of it. So basically, these guys are going to come in and help us inventory all of our assets and figure out how to put everything on a schedule for
Yes.
upkeep and repair and.
Yep, developing an asset management plan that will help us formulate a capital plan going forward. We'll also bring in one of their consultants. We'll have a half day of preventive maintenance,
Okay.
talking about the importance of that. But they'll also help us select a program to help us manage the asset management program. And part of the scope is also to help us move toward a new financial program. So there's a couple different pieces that are involved in this.
But is this in conjunction with what I can't think of his name, Caden has been doing?
Yeah, so like it's a bigger leap. I mean, what he's been doing has been sort of a stopgap till we can figure out what works for us moving forward from a software standpoint. But he's been working with the ops guys to do the fire hydrant and the PRV stuff in the short term.
Okay.
Yep.
But this will be pumps and motors and pipe and more
Yeah.
comprehensive district-wide.
No, it seems like something that would be great. They were saying that the hardest part is going to be like once we get this roadmap is actually implementing it, everything, right?
Importing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
And
we have to really focus on, nuts and bolts, easy wins, like implementable solutions. Try to make the more academic piece of it as kind of streamlined as possible, given, we're a smaller water district compared to other folks that this team has worked with in the past. I'm happy with how they put it together and
Yeah.
been a budget number we had penciled in before so we selected them through an SOQ process.
Okay. And then there's something about a proposer interviews or like, are we bringing on somebody else?
Yeah, so as part of selecting CMMS software is the acronym. I can't even tell you on top of my head what that means.
So it's a software, not a
It's
person.
part of the software vendor solicitation. We'll do interviews and have demonstrations and bring people in and try and find the best fit. And that's both for the asset management piece and if we make a shift on the billing side. Yeah, I'm happy that Steve wanted to kind of include the billing system because we can kind of make sure there's no roadblocks in the future. Like if we're going to select an asset management program that'd be incompatible with our preferred
Yeah.
billing software,
Yeah.
that puts us in a tough spot. So we're going to bite the bullet now, get it done. It's a little bit more fee and it'll be more demanding on staff short term, but I think it's probably the right approach to do
Okay, great. Did anyone else have any questions on the purchase order? Do we have a motion to approve the purchase order and the January 25th minutes?
so.
Okay.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. Joel?
Joel, you're on mute. Joel, you're still on
Yeah,
mute.
aye. Aye.
Okay, that's unanimous. Fantastic. And then you've got a truck surplus?
Yeah, so we have a 2016 utility truck that has 59,000 miles on it, and it has been in the shop more than it's been on the road. So it's, 7 plus 8 years old, and it keeps on having problems with the DEF system, the computer system. So we're just gonna cut our losses and eliminate it from the fleet. So we'd like approval to surplus that. In the packet it says it's worth about $23,000. I think we can probably get a little bit more for that, but we're just throwing good money after bad with this truck.
Yeah. And we just bought a new one, right?
We have two trucks coming this spring, and then we have a new dump truck that'll either be here late fall or early next year. But this we'll just rotate through and move older trucks down into the fleet.
Okay.
I haven't checked my math, but my mind tells me that I should do surplus 3 or 4 vehicles last year and only bought 2 to replace them. Are we getting short on vehicles, or am I just doing my math bad?
No, we did. I don't know how many we actually surplus. We have spares. We have a couple of CNG trucks. We may end up surplusing one of those, but we have 2 coming. We'll, in the pecking order, move those down the list and try to get rid of the older ones because we do have plenty of vehicles.
Yep.
This morning, I had to break it up.
We celebrated Anna's 20th anniversary yesterday.
And
we offered that cake for Dave for breakfast, and he politely refused. So
he saved it for me for dinner.
Like it. Do we need to have a motion to approve the truck surplus as well?
Please, yes.
I move we approve the salvaging of the surplus vehicle.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, that's unanimous. And then we've got some engineering department updates. So, Sam, you're first.
Hold on. So we don't have a significant bid project this year. Our large project, $1 million-ish project, is going to be mostly completely managed internally, and then we'll be bidding smaller pieces for insulation work, fabrication, mechanical, things of that nature. So we don't have a tier one project like we typically see on these updates. The tier two projects are both carryovers from last year. So Sage Hills Estates Betterment kind of gave multiple updates last year. The water lines are still in place, tested, and essentially accepted by the district. But there's a building and control valves that are needed to kind of finish the subdivision. So it's essentially a phase into 2 separate projects at this point, kind of things on the high pressure side and things on the low pressure side that aren't functional without these additional control valves. So we're hoping to get that finished this year. And Promontory, I think, will be motivated to finish it off because they pulled essentially every building permit they can in the subdivision without finishing this PRV structure. So that's a good carrot for everybody to get that done. The Brown Canyon Connection Betterment, gave some updates on last year as well. We actually this week, for the first time, saw the proposed new alignment for the road coming out of the South 14 Promontory on a Browns Canyon though. So we haven't seen engineered plans. I mean, you're probably loop on this too, obviously, for it. But we've seen kind of just the high level, pretty picture alignment. And, I don't think there'll be an issue to the district, and we'll likely still participate in some sort of Benham project. And I'm hopeful that budget number is still in the ballpark. If anything, I think the footage for the waterline upside is probably going down by a little bit. So let's see how construction, how the unit costs come in on the Promontory project. We're carrying over that budget number for at least 1 more year. If things continue to stall, I think we might reevaluate carrying that budget number over for that budget. So the Old Ranch Booster Pump Station is the site of our largest project for the year. And those are kind of the 3 main components in the bullets. The first is having an on-site generator. It's the next logical site for the district install generator. It's at the base of the colony, a stacked booster pump station system. So we kind of have a general concept where on most critical pump stations, we'll have an on-site generator. And then uphill pump stations, we can utilize mobile generators via transfer switch and try and keep a section of the system in service, even if we're going to have an extended power outage. So this kind of forms the base of that pyramid for that kind of resiliency effort by the district. The second piece is putting surge improvements, and I have a mistake on it. It's on the suction side of the pump station, not the discharge. But with increased use and demands on this area of the system, we're always planning on putting more surge improvements in and follow the term of that this year. And then the last piece is kind of along with the surge and mechanical changes, we'll be able to retrofit a control valve to be able to take water from the White Pine Zone and bring it back into Atkinson, because it's currently just a one-way street.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not something I think we typically use in normal operations, but again, just it's a nice thing to have in our back pocket. We've got more sources kind of in the Silver Springs White Pine Zone. This could allow us to utilize those elsewhere if we ever had a source open down or anything of that nature. So that budget figure hasn't changed, and we're currently kind of in the procurement stage, trying to work on those long lead time items. The generator is probably going to be the biggest long lead time item. Would you agree?
Yes.
Some
other electrical improvements are also long, 40 plus week lead times.
Yeah. But the positive thing is from nuts and bolts, we can kind of separate the electrical almost into a separate project from the surge and mechanical, so we can work on those independently to a certain extent. So we can still continue to make progress. And there's just a picture of a bulk nitrogen tank we had down at Lost Canyon for that surge system, and kind of where we're planning to put one on the back side of the Old Ranch Booster Pump Station. Some Peak Well 2 is just being wrapped up. That's a carryover from last year. Just kind of some finishing touches. Chris is running down. Welcome to the series. One of that moves here. And then kind of the mid-sized focus project for the district next year is happening at Innsbruck Booster Pump Station, which is the highest elevation pump station in Summit Park. Bridges the gap between Tank 2 and Tank 3 at the top of Summit Park. A lot of the electrical equipment is dated or even original from when that facility was built. And Summit Park Well 2 is also physically located in the building, the well that is physically located in the building. So it's a good time to kind of get all that stuff changed out, bring the well up to snuff, get it into SCADA, allow us to operate a little bit better, and do some rehab on the well. We leaned on Well 2 a little bit this year with our tank project. We were limited in how we could get water into Summit Park. And I think it makes sense to continue to invest in some of these more neglected wells like we've been in the past few years.
Which tank is 3 and which is 2 again?
So
3 is the oversized one on top.
Yeah, there's a big pond
above the trailhead. And 2 is the one that's on that hip point being on the dirt road.
Just right behind the Innsbruck
pump station. It's up on Innsbruck.
Trees. Yeah, you really don't see it.
Yeah.
You walk past the booster.
Yeah, because it cuts back behind you to the right.
Yeah.
But it's paved going up to that building.
Paved the building, and then the tank's just above that.
Yeah. Under the tank.
So now that
we have two others.
And above the buried lines.
So there's 3 total. So it's the one we just built.
Yeah.
And at the bottom of Summit Park on Crescent.
That's an abandoned tank.
The graffiti one?
Yeah.
Hmm.
When the Summit Park went bankrupt, that was an asset that Summit Park did not pay. There used to be a well house up there too. They tore that down, but I actually directed them to some people to tear that tank down, but I think it's logistically tough and expensive.
The buried one or the one?
The green one up top of the graffiti one.
The green one. The buried one is.
That's fine.
Yeah.
So the rec district owns the graffiti one now.
Huh.
Well,
it's close.
Yeah, Tank 2 is the smallest, I guess, now. Tank 3 is by far the biggest, 700.
Yeah.
And then kind of a little bit of a smaller project is an operational improvement on the transmission line from Lost Canyon. So again, it's like a This is our 5-ish mile transmission line coming from Head of Rockport Reservoir up to the treatment plant. And there are no isolation valves on the transmission side of that water line. So if we need to do any significant work down at the pump station, that's, you know, we have to drain the entire transmission line, and it makes it significant. So working with Brandon and transmission team, they kind of found this location. This is kind of see the view there down in Austin, where it's below our lowest raw water customer, but also high enough up that it kind of doesn't make it such a high pressure facility. You know, we're not doing 380s, but special order high pressure class parts, because at the bottom of Lost Canyon, we said, what, like 430 PSI or something like that. So this is
it's below your lowest.
Butylite's our lowest customer, and it's right below that.
So if you close this valve,
we can drain the line and take the pump station on service, but using the
feed them through the pond.
Yeah, using the head on the pond, we can continue to feed raw water customers.
And then as that line drains back down to Lost Canyon, you guys would air it.
Yeah. Yep. So while the air valve is part of the drop there, full port gate valve, and
so you can dig through it.
Yeah. But yeah, previously there were two check valves along the alignment that were
down. And valves. We had some valves, and they took them all out for the surge.
So we did have ISO valves along with those check valves. Okay, but those have since been removed. So we think this would be a good
thing. Butterflies.
Yep.
And you couldn't pick them up.
And there's check valves also, so I had to rip all of it out to do the picking.
Yeah.
That was like the phase two expansion.
I had a mild panic attack when I started and looked at the record drawings we were going to pick and saw their check valves on.
They don't exist. So it's fine. Trust them.
So that's that project. We're going to kind of help them Brian's transmission team on that one, run it down. Parallel up with your pump station on your laptop.
Sure. Yeah. Currently we have a 200 amp service there, and it is at the, when we run one pump, it's at the absolute limit. And if the power gets imbalanced, like it has been lately around here, we are blowing fuses on a regular basis. Guys have to physically run up there and replace it. Not an inexpensive fuse. They're like $600 for three of them. What we're talking about doing is upsizing the service to get it to a 400 amp service. Some improvements we had done, how long ago did we do those? Probably 6 years ago?
Yeah.
5-6 years ago, we updated the MCC down inside the vault to a better MCC. That MCC is a 400 amp capacity. So we're asking Rocky Mountain Power to up the transformer to 400 amps, and then our service will actually go up to 400 amps. We won't have that overhead problem anymore, and it will also fit for future expansion for a bigger, basically double the size horsepower pump in that facility. So somewhat forward thinking toward the Olympics and future use of going towards the Olympic Park. It's seems like a good time and a good use of district resources to do this. So thanks.
And then the last project is just putting a little paving effort down at our Silver Creek site. You know, combined shop, office, campus concept, we're considering investing some resources down here and even build another building. I think it's kind of gotten neglected kind of in the interim. But obviously, it's seen a ton of use, and I think caving there will be a big help to the ops folks and keeping everything clean, keeping the existing facilities in good shape. So we've got probably, 80-90% design for the paving done. We're going to start getting pricing over the winter from some of our preferred contractors and try and see how far we can stretch the dollar and get that done this year as well. So that's kind of a wrap up. That's the major project for the district. Didn't really go over the design projects, but can give updates on those as well as needed, in department updates, and then kind of include a preliminary schedule of them, which I'll update quarterly as part of the quarterly updates and be able to track the project that way.
sort nitrogen tanks, they come with a pretty high pressure rating.
Yeah, I top of my head, I forget.
It's like 500.
It's right. Over 400 for sure.
The rating, because there's a lot of overhead.
Yeah, and from the way the suppliers kind of go, that pressure is pretty consistent, even, regardless of what level the bulk tank's at. And then we have an existing surge tank in Old Ranch, so we're going to have two different regulators to bump that down and serve both surge tanks, both on the suction side and on the discharge side, of a single bulk nitrogen tank. So that's kind of a concept of switching away from the compressor system, which is what we currently have
on the discharge.
And the nitrogen is liquid. If that's how it gets delivered to us. And then there's an evaporator in there that allows it to expand and when we release the pressure off of it. And that's what offset, that's what we're using instead of the air in the tank.
So I think it's a pretty slick system. I think it's a good application for us with the multiple things. We've got proven it to other sites in the district. Using the same supplier across all three sites. We'll be leasing the tank, so we won't actually own it. And then, again, the supplier will work when it comes by and refills with bulk tank as needed. It's fairly hands-off for our transmission folks.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's all I got.
Okay.
That's a lot.
I have a few questions. Hey, Sam. I'm not trying to be... a dick about this, but is there do we have to do all these projects? That's number one. I have some other questions as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So when we plan capital projects, we kind of have like a foggier 10-year window, and then we have a pretty clear window on what we want to do in the next 5 years. And I'd say anything within the 5-year window we have planned is a pretty critical project. And then at that point, it's just triaging which are the most, like, what can we get done budget wise? And then which are the most important to the district? So it's not a matter.
And the other question, I don't mean to cut you off. The other question is, are we throwing good money after bad or bad money after good? Or, I mean, can we rob Peter to pay Paul? Can we take some parts and spend less money?
So, Joel, the capital project plan allows us to go on offense instead of always being on defense. If we can plan and schedule a project, it's typically cheaper than having to do things on an emergency basis.
Yeah.
So every year, Sam goes out and projects, you know, where is our weakest point in the system to try to get ahead of that. So we're not trying to, always be on the leak in one part of the system or another. And that's, even though we are spending money, if we didn't spend money, we'd always be chasing our tail.
Okay. All right. I'm just asking questions because, I mean, I think you know well enough by now. If we can save some money, that's a good thing. I really hate debt, and I really hate going into the red, so to speak. But, no, thank you very much for your answers.
Joel, this is Ian. What I'm hearing and seeing in the presentation Sam gave is there's also a couple of safety ones in there, and those are mandatory in my view.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Safety aspect, we have to deal with that. We have to keep our employees safe. So there's not a question of saving money on this.
Okay, I understand. Thank you.
And realistically, the district will probably never be debt-free. That's just the nature of the beast.
No, I understand that. I just want to keep it to a minimum. And I'm not trying to be a pain in the neck.
No.
But you answered my questions. I appreciate it very much.
No problem.
All right. If there aren't any other questions, I am dying to hear more about Jess's report on PFAS.
Help strategically place. All right. So just quick poll. How many of you here have heard of PFAS or PFAS?
Okay. Great poll hands.
So it sounds like this group is pretty familiar with it, but I guess just as a quick background, they are chemicals that have both industrial and consumer applications. I've included some in our packet, but the reason why they're concerning is that they are persistent. They don't really break down in the environment. They accumulate in living organisms, and that becomes an issue because they're also toxic. So when they accumulate, they can cause adverse health effects. And then another side note of being persistent is that they can travel long distances in the environment. So it's not necessarily that they are any one of these things. It's especially because they're all four of these aspects that makes them concerning and why they are such a hot topic right now. So now zooming into the district, just as a little background of in the past few years, there has been a lot of investigative sampling around the district. It started out as individual sources, and then we tried to get more composite or randomized samples that would still be representative, but not spending the time and especially money trying to sample a bunch of individual sources. And during these years, both sources and randomized samples, early on, there were no detections of PFAS, but in 2023, during the randomized and composite sampling, some detections did pop up, specifically in the Atkinson zone. And that led us to decide that we are going to not just take composite samples anymore, but we're looking at the sources contributing to the composite that was yielding PFAS detections. So this chart in green right here, this is an example of in March and in September of 2023, we were taking a bunch of composites, and one of them came back positive for PFAS, and it came back with just three compounds. So PFAS, there are thousands, tens of thousands of compounds. These are just three of which that were detected. So in Silver Creek tank, we decided, all right, what are the sources contributing to this tank? We're going to test them all individually. So if you go down to the chart in blue, and you can, you'll see in the bullet points on the top of the page here, we have like Atkinson, Jailhouse, Silver Creek. Those are all the sources that we were thinking are contributing to Silver Creek tank. And when we went and sampled all of those individually in December of 2023, three of those came back positive for PFAS, Tank Well 16, Gorgoza Well 6, and Silver Creek Well 10. And you can tell just by looking at the data here, Tank Well 16, by quantity standards, has huge spikes in PFAS. And interestingly enough, if you look on the far left of that chart, 6-2 FTS, and then 6-2 FTS, PFPEA, and then PFHXA were the three, if you go back up to the green chart, were the three that were spiking in that composite sample. So it was very interesting to see that it looked like what was found in Tank Well 16 was probably heavily influencing or impacting the spike in that composite in Silver Creek tank. But we still can't lose track of Gorgoza Well 6 or Silver Creek Well 10. So now that we have this idea of which of these individual sources have which compounds of PFAS, we can look at what is the EPA doing on a federal level, what are the standards, what is coming down the pipeline in terms of health and safety. And you can go back to here or stay at the other. We'll go back to the one. We'll stick within Mountain Regional. It's important to note that if you look at the amount detected in parts per trillion, besides Tank Well 16, Gorgoza and Silver Creek Well 10 are well below 5 parts per trillion. And proposed MCL for only certain PFAS compounds is 4. So right now, with the exception of Tank Well 16, the PFAS that has been detected in Mountain Regional water wells are, it's below the proposed limit. So that's a good sign. It's still concerning that we see PFAS, but it is looking like, from a health standpoint, it is not an emergency at this point. I guess I'll also use this time to say, of these compounds that you see here, only three of them are fall under the proposed MCL. The rest of the compounds have not, there's not word of them being regulated. And those three are PFOS, PFOA, so those are the second to the last two. Those are only found in Gorgoza and Silver Creek. And then PFHXS. So, yeah, so I guess that's a quick summary of what's going on within Mountain Regional. Now if we go down to the next chart with the blue and the red, we contacted Park City Municipal and we were kind of wondering what's going on with your wells and what have you guys been seeing. So here's a comparison. In red, you have three wells from Park City Municipal, and then the blue are the three wells that we just saw above. And as you can see, Park City's having a bit more of an issue. They have more detections and they tend to have greater quantities. However, none of the quantities have reached tank well 16 levels yet. But I just thought I'd kind of...
So I didn't really understand that. It looks like they're really low. Park City is
low. For sure. They're lower compared to tank well 16, but they're higher on average across the board than Gorgoza and Silver Creek. I would say tank well 16 is by far an outlier. But if you look at the other, the medium blue and the dark blue,
okay,
they're definitely a lot lower. And they're particularly lower if you look at the PFOS and PFOA at the end of the, on the far right. They're, a couple of their wells are right now exceeding proposed MCLs by the EPA for those chemicals. Whereas ours are
ski wax.
Ski wax. We're still in the preliminary investigation of figuring out what is going on. Now, let's look at outcomes. So now that we've figured out tank well 16's got a ton of PFAS, but our other wells are doing all right. Out of caution, we have taken tank well 16 offline, and we are looking into why do we see so much PFAS? Can it be remediated? Or are we going to have to abandon it? If we were to abandon it, I think it's on that last page, tank well 16 contributes 0.4%, at least in 2023, so it's not a huge contributor if we were to take it offline. But Chris, we want to go to the big, that other PowerPoint PDF, or not PDF, the other tab, yeah, that will put it as a comparison. So this is like a summary of what's going on. You can see Mountain Regional wells on the top with Gorgoza, Silver Creek, and tank well 16. And then Park City wells are on the bottom. You have these colorful pinwheels because they represent signatures. So what types of PFAS are we looking at each location? And then on the left, that chart to remind you quantity. So keep in mind quantity on the left, types of PFAS on the right. And you can see that Park City wells have very similar signatures, similar types of PFAS represented, which makes sense just based on how close they're located to each other. And then if you're looking at Mountain Regional wells, there is quite a difference. There's not a lot of similarity between those three. Silver Creek well 10 only detected the one type of PFAS, PFOA. Tank well 16, which by far had the greatest quantity, has quite a different signature than the other wells. And it makes you wonder, is this an environmental thing, or is this perhaps something to do with the well construction? It is the most recently constructed well with the district. So it was constructed at a time in which PFAS did exist, and PFAS is known to have industrial purposes. So it's one avenue to explore, but very, very early on, we cannot say anything definitively. It's just interesting to look at the differences and how it does seem to be an outlier both in quantity and the types of compounds found. And then, yeah, like Gorgoza well 6, different signature than Park City wells. And it is concerning that it has all three shades of purple, which represent the three proposed regulated compounds. But keep in mind, while it has all three of those, they are all currently below the proposed MCL. So just something to keep an eye on, but not an emergency at this point.
Where's the triumph?
Yeah, that's, you know, cause I read this and then I went out for a hike on the rail trail and I was like, oh, those guys, you know, like.
See, and I'm thinking that it's right downstream from the wastewater treatment plant. So it's getting everybody's discharge from the entire city.
The tank well should be upgraded. It's captured.
Yeah, cross gradient. I guess I don't know exactly where it's at and what charge
that. The treatment plant should flow more to the northeast. Should be gradient from there.
Yeah,
so I wouldn't.
If that dot's accurate, it's like within a couple of feet.
Well, yeah.
Even that rental equipment place. I mean, there are a few suspects. Burr Brothers, I'm gonna,
if you're talking about ski wax, you know, the Gorgoza well is right next to Woodward and the other three, the PCMC, are right next to the mountains.
Well, and that Gorgoza well is also close to 80 and we have high salt levels in there.
So this is the well location.
It's in the Key Lake, down at the bottom of those volcanoes.
Oh, right. 16. Yeah. Well, 16. And as a comment, this is also the fire district repair building.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're off the hook. Thank you. Yeah, it's a major fire repair in all sorts.
It hasn't been there very long, but
yeah, it's what,
before the tank.
5 years old.
On the plus side, I think us being a small water district, just going on this discussion, we can kind of be proactive and find potential contamination sources and try to reach out to those folks as part of our source protection program. So that's certainly something we intend to do along with continued sampling quarterly, right?
Yeah, we have 3 more rounds of sampling taking place throughout the rest of the year.
How is the MCL going to be enforced? Is it going to be
weird.
Enforced end of pipe, or is it enforced per source? Like, can you blend? When you blend tank 16, at that load to the whole district, it's probably trivial.
So it's at the source, and the state has not decided whether or not they're allowed to blend tank.
Okay.
Or any of them. We won't have to blend it. Hard to say, for example, just anecdotally, I've been in close communications with the Division of Drinking Water folks. To my knowledge, within a couple of weeks at least, they have not decided whether they're going to allow them to blend as a mitigation measure.
Okay.
Because the goal, you know, there's a MCL, like what you're held to from a compliance perspective, and then oftentimes there's another component, the MCLG, the maximum contaminant goal. And for all these compounds, the goal is zero. So, if the intent is to get things down to zero, I could see a potential argument from the state side that blending is not meeting the intent of that goal. But that would be unprecedented in how they've enforced any of the contempt.
The good news is Michelle is leading out on this from the city, and she's all over this.
Yeah,
so
she's been dealing with it a lot longer than us.
Yeah. And on another note, just remember that Jess started with us in October. And she's already grabbed this and run with it. And she's doing a great job, not only in this, but everything that she's been tasked with.
That's why I was going to ask her the next question.
Go ahead.
We're doing original composite sampling. Yeah. Are we over the MCLs?
I was just going to say, Chris, if you go back to the original document, that was the green chart.
Yeah.
And while Tank Well 16 contributes very minimally as the district as a whole, remember we don't blend all of our water in one massive tank before distributing it. It does get funneled over or bottlenecked in certain ways. And so, yeah, to answer your question, in certain instances, these three chemicals are not regulated. But were proposed, they would be exceeding the proposed MCL4, but they do not fall under They're not PFOA, PFOS, or PFH excess.
And from like an ethical standpoint, if we know the EPA is looking at potentially making MCLs for those others.
Mm-hmm. This would be very problematic.
Yeah. Because I would have a hard time blending. So
that's fine. Yeah, yeah.
So,
okay.
Is there a schedule out there?
In terms of when they'd enforce it? Or no?
Yeah, when they, because they're not.
They're not MCLs.
No, they're not yet.
They may never be.
I don't know the timeline off the top of my head.
Yeah, it has moved through this part of the process, the rulemaking process. It's the fastest the EPA has ever moved in anything in the history of safe drinking water.
It's like I'm asking you to guess what the EPA is doing.
Yeah, basically, they're moving as fast. They're unprecedentedly fast.
It's a real problem in the wastewater world, too, because they collect and concentrate. Mm-hmm. And we've been looking at technologies, and it's crazy stuff.
I mean, it's scary, yeah.
Yeah.
And the implication to the district, if we have to do all of these pocket treatment plants, right, at $7, $10, $20 million, mm-hmm. I mean, I know Joel's concerned about some of these capital projects, but if it's a choice of losing a source or treating, or what's the solution if we have to turn some of these sources off? Where do we get the water to replace it from? Right?
Yes, no, can't turn off.
So
we'd be hurt if we had to not use those sources in peak demand.
Yeah, 110 and 106 would be huge losses.
I think well is only 60 gallons a minute, so it's not the end of the world on that one.
These are bigger.
Mike, what's that treatment technology that pull out pretty fast?
We've been looking at one where you get the water so hot it turns from a non-polar solvent into a polar solvent. And it's like, it takes a lot of energy. And then you have up against your air permit. And what
gonna need some more solar panels.
The real estate that's going to expire. The energy, the infrastructure.
What, I thought you were going to say like 300.
See 4,000 zeros.
That's how you get progressive.
And then it'll break down.
Because you can't get rid of the membrane.
Well, that was my question. Does carbon or?
Yeah, so on the drinking water side, the primary pathways so far that have been implemented are carbon, so an adsorptive process.
Right.
That's not going down to zero, but that could get you an MCL. And then ion exchange, specifically targeting ion exchange.
And if carbon is the solution, then we need to go through our carbon more frequently. So there, I mean,
then how do you dispose of
it? Yeah, exactly.
We need carbon in a different spot.
Does
right. The water up to the.
Does our current system is kind of a nice byproduct where we're already kind of doing it, or
we only apply a carbon polishing step at the surface water treatment
plant. Right,
and we've only had non-detects at all of our surface water sampling we've done so far, which has been the longest history of sampling anyone in the district. So we do have the technology there, but it's kind of the wrong spot
for right
what we're seeing them.
Sure.
And all these walls would be pretty problematic. I mean, it'd be really challenging. Park City is in a tough spot.
Yeah, I mean, to do just creek piping to a centralized treatment plant would be astronomical.
Yeah, they can't blend them.
Yeah. And if you can't do one centralized one, then you're talking about multiple, you know, in the case of three separate.
Yeah.
I'm feeling it changed.
But you did say something about remediation, like the well might be able to be remediated, right?
It depends. If tank well 16 in particular, if it is something to do with drilling mud or the fluids used to create the well, there's some talk of maybe raising where we take the water. So we can't take out the drilling mud used to make the well, but if we raise where we take the water, there's just less water passing through that contaminated area. Yeah, less exposure to it. So It won't go down to zero, but it could go down substantially so, or maybe not substantially so. It's very hard to tell at this point. But that would be only if that was the problem. Like we said, we don't know if it's coming from historical contamination from a fire or from other environmental factors. But that's just one thought. If it was something to do specifically with well construction, there might be ways to mitigate where water passes through contaminated soil or not.
I also think it's interesting that it's higher in the winter than it is, or at least, you know, in our data set, you know, March and December were worse than September.
And keep in mind that this was a composite sample, and so we don't know how other sources may have diluted it or not when it went into the tank at the time of these samples being taken. So that's why this next coming year, now that we have December, we'll be testing again in March and June and September. Now that we know to pay attention to a specific source, we can't really extrapolate too much from this graph with the green chart, just because we don't know what percentage of what wells are contributing to this. But yeah, it is interesting to see that seasonal variation. It's just like, I don't think we can draw any conclusions from that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Well, it's a really, really fascinating report. Mm-hmm. I really thought it was great.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, and then we're on to Andy.
I know Sam did mention our biggest capital project. We are going to be submitting, can you bring up the fiction? We are going to be submitting our building permit on our admin building in our shop next Friday. So our goal again is to do a groundbreaking in April. One of the interesting things, we met with a couple of people from the building department on Monday. Each building is going to have a separate permit, and there's some other things that we'll have to do. But based on everything that they've seen, hopefully it'll be a smooth process and break ground end of April, and then hopefully be in by the fall of 2025. The other building permit that we applied for is for the solar array. One of the things, because of the anchoring system of the solar, I don't know what you want to call them.
The floats.
We're going to have to remove some dirt around the existing tank up at the treatment plant. So about 30 plus loads of dirt are going to have to be removed. We're going to do that around May 20th, removing those truckloads, and then hopefully that work will commence, you know, June-ish, barring any not being able to get materials or whatever. And again, that should be done the fall of 2024, so we'll hopefully get that up and going and that done. As part of the infrastructure, the IRA, Lisa found out that this will have to be active and going. We'll have to file a tax return and apply for the tax credit to get the money rebated to us. And then, of course, we'll have the blue sky portion. So we have both of those things moving along. Over the past few weeks, I've met with all of the department managers talking about succession and talking about the things that maybe we should be considering. So we'll be having a manager staff meeting on the 6th as part of the succession portion, which will lead into our strategic plan, and then we'll present that to the board later this year. That's what I have.
So we're having a groundbreaking in April, but it's not going to start until 2025?
It'll be finished.
Oh, it'll be finished in 2025.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll do our ceremonial shovel. And then a lot of the excavation has been done. I don't know if anyone's driven back there. But we piggyback on the county contract as far as the blasting. And so a lot of that has already been done. They're going to excavate for the building, the shop, the material storage, and then backfill it. So it should almost be shovel ready to go when in April. The administration building will start first, And then in June, they'll start on the shop building. That's a steel frame building that will go a lot quicker. So it's possible that the shop will be ready before the admin building, but the timing of everything. So completed, occupied fall of 2025.
Wow.
Question?
So who's our contractor?
Our contractor is Oakland.
How are they on their guaranteed max contracts?
We haven't gotten our final numbers yet. Okay. But when I met with Oakland and the architects last week, they are in the weeds on a lot of things, where caulking needs to go on windows. I've been really impressed with the Oakland crew, and Oakland is also going to be doing the work on the Justice Center. So hopefully, if the county can get going on their project, we might see some economies of scale that way. But everything that Oakland's done so far has been really, really good. So one of the things we had that we were going through is this is a model of how the sun will come through the building. So this is just a rendering of what the spine of the admin building will look like. So the offices are on the right hand side, and then you have water quality and mechanical and whatever room on the side. And then directly in the back, you can see kind of that wooden slat. That's going to be a collaboration space. And then beyond that, as you walk into the building, there'll be a similar space where the customer service people work. And then the flat roof area, for the most part, not entirely, is designed to be locked off. So if anyone else wanted to use that space, we could leave the building and then someone could use the conference room kitchen area without us having to worry about that.
Were we putting solar on the building?
We are not. It was more expensive.
So what will we get the price?
The final number, we are at 90%. So we need to be close to 100% for them to go out and get full bids. So within the next, month or so, we'll get final numbers. But we have worked closely with the architects and with Oakland, letting them know they know what our number is. Everything is showing coming in under. But also remember that 18 does not include the land cost, the excavation cost, the infrastructure cost that the county has provided. So at the end of the day, we'll be closer to 22. The county's carrying that note. And then we'll be selling our portion of the building, which would generate some cash as well.
But it's tracking the budget, I guess.
It is tracking, yes. We beat them up about something.
Has the construction costs flattened out? You know, we were kind of wondering about.
There are some things that have leveled off, but they're not escalating as quickly as the other ones. Lead times on some items have more normalized. We have had to order the transformer already. They haven't told us anything that would hold them up at this point.
Is there an escalation clause? You know, 2x4s take off or something.
I don't, honestly, I don't know the specifics of that in the contract.
With Oakland?
I don't recall seeing that in the contract, but.
No,
Force majeure,
but it doesn't have to do with the pricing. It has to do with, national calamities, acts of God, slowdowns. Mostly, force majeure is provisions that would come into play for delaying the contract.
Now, I will also say that some of the the cost of the excavation and everything that the county is performing is also being carried in an Oakland budget. So some of our numbers right now are being carried in multiple places. So that number should come down. Because Oakland has an excavation number.
Right.
And things like that. And some of the other numbers were really like, they were carrying over $1 million for furniture. And the furniture number is really 350.
Yeah.
So we're not adjusting those numbers down. There's contingencies also built into the budget that some of those numbers have fallen off, but we're not dropping things until we see the final number. But if you'd like to have the building named after you, we can talk. For a million.
For a small donation. How much do you think we'll get for selling the other building?
So we had an appraisal done a year ago. It came in at $1,350,000. And we have had discussions with the county, letting them know that we're going to sell. We've also let Basin Rec know. My guess is one of them may pick it up. Because both of them need space. And when we renewed the lease of this side, we made the lease on this assumable. So if someone wanted to carry, you know, purchase and do the same thing that we're doing, you could do that.
Smart.
Great. Thanks, Andy. Then any questions on the department updates?
I have a question that goes back to the asset management I was thinking of.
Sure.
Can you explain tying the asset management to the billing system? What's the...
It's not just the billing, it's the full financial system. So it's all of Steve's world, so the capital planning, all... Like, because currently our billing and financial software is all based in Excel. It's all in one software platform.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had discussions internally about some of the shortcomings of that system. And by trying to get perhaps a better or different financial system that allows better forecasting and so forth, that ties together with the asset management system to make it easier to do the long range planning.
And as Steve is carrying things on the balance sheet.
Yeah. That's coming from asset management, how it feeds up in there.
Yeah.
And that came up when we redid our impact fee this year, when Steve has an asset list. It's not really talking to our real world, you know, portfolio asset. It makes it challenging to bring those two things together and create a defensible.
I heard billing, so that was, that makes more sense.
Yeah, and I think the big piece on the billing part isn't so much, I mean, certainly, we're hopeful there'll be inputs that can improve the asset management. And I think the big thing we want to avoid is having two products that'll be incompatible, you know, in the future, the billing software and this CMMS asset management. So as long as they're working together, we can move forward with the AMPs and then, you know, the finance folks can kind of work with their schedule on implementing it as they choose. But we'll just avoid those, like a big problem down the road is the idea.
Yeah, and also tying in the billing side allows for so the work order flow. So from Anna's standpoint of doing customer service requests, if the customer service data doesn't talk to the asset management stuff, then you have a disconnect between the two of them there. So,
I heard billing and I thought.
Yeah, it's really the financial side of it.
Yeah, that helps. Thank you.
Yeah, and billing could be an add-on to that, but that's not the driver.
Okay.
It was actually a last minute. It was a revision we requested when we were working through this.
See what's out there.
Yeah.
It's kind of a weird marriage of the.
Yeah, and Jacob actually had a good suggestion in our discussion where we could do a single procurement and even have folks, you know, partner up with the two software platforms and present to the district and be more cost effective for us working with the Jacobs folks and time efficient. And, hopefully sorts those long-term issues out. I don't know if that's exactly the route we're going to go, but I thought it was interesting.
Find your way. That's good. Thank you.
I'm going to probably have a conflict in May at our May meeting. I can probably attend by by Zoom, but I have a niece that's getting married on a Friday, which is very inconvenient. So,
gives you all a week to recover.
If only it wasn't in Georgia.
Oh.
That'd be a red eye, right?
Okay, it was the 16th, is what we have.
Yeah,
that's the scheduled day.
Yeah, that's the scheduled day. It's just been the year for changing, or, you know.
So the next one's right before Memorial Day, the 23rd, right?
And it looked like the only thing on this, on the major thing on the schedule was probably going to be the audit, which I'm sure I will have gotten a sneak peek at the month before.
I think I get to do it.
So I show it scheduled for the 16th right now.
For the 16th, yeah.
Same month,
May.
Hmm.
I show it on the 23rd for some reason on my calendar.
I have it on the 16th.
Okay.
Maybe you're just a step ahead of the schedule.
It probably was originally scheduled for the 23rd.
Because there are 5 Thursdays.
Yeah, so there are 5 Thursdays. Anyway, I'm okay moving it. I'm okay attending my Zoom. But I just wanted to throw that out there. I've tried everything I could to maybe go a day later.
Move the wedding.
Well, no, the wedding's okay. I could fly in the day of the wedding, but then there's the rehearsal dinner the night before, and so.
You gotta ease into the humidity.
Is that where you moved from?
No, oh. Growing up here, I don't know how people do it.
Yeah, but it's because they've always been there and they just don't know any better.
You grow accustomed to it. From Virginia.
So what did we decide?
23?
Joel, does that work for you?
Anything works for me.
Okay. Okay, so then I'm going to...
So from the 16th to the 23rd.
Right, so I'm going to try and send this out like I did last time. 23rd. Okay. So hopefully everyone will get an invitation.
And then, sorry, everyone get the other emails to follow up from the last. Do you want to bring, can you bring up the hydrants, Chris?
It's a lot of hydrants, right? Do you have to repaint them every 3 years too? Or?
Every time I go through and repaint them.
So is it you guys or is it like our HOA guys that are shoveling out all the hydrants in Prompt?
HOA, right? You guys.
Okay.
Any HOA is responsible for snow removal on hydrants?
Wait, doesn't Summit Park have an HOA?
Yeah, make them responsible.
I saw your trucks digging us out. I mean,
it makes me nervous when the district does that. Mm-hmm. Because if there's ever an incident and there's a hydrant that was not cleared, I think we take liability on it. I mean, it's the homeowner or the closest resident or business to that proximity that should take responsibility for that.
That's what the fire district promotes. Whoever lives by it takes care of it.
Send the request of the list here for all of theirs and their HOA has some volunteer agent.
You have some of
I've trained my neighbors. They do.
I've seen some of those hydrants and I good luck, you know. That's why it takes a backhoe for a lot of ours.
The one I saw somebody digging out on Parkview last week looked purple. So. Yeah, they haven't been hit all year. I'm glad you guys.
Pretty brutal up there.
Okay, I guess we're having technical difficulties.
Yeah, you can do it.
But anyway, Kate's been able to create a GIS map that goes around and identifies characteristics of the fire hydrant when it's been exercised, painted, pressure, things like that. So it's just useful information. And those get hit pretty much a third.
So this summer, the Caden made it available on iPads, so all the seasonal guys would go out there and, you know, check the box. So
yeah,
the map, you know, shows the ones that are done, the ones that are left. But when you each individual hydrant, you know, like say all the characteristics are listed, and sometimes they take pictures for PRVs and stuff like that. So it's kind of a cool system.
That is cool. All right. Do we have anything else before we adjourn? No, officially adjourned at 7:00. Oh, go ahead, Mike.
Almost. Well, yeah. So I'm trying to stay in my lane here, my swim lane, as far as the plant goes and direction forward. But I've been thinking about sustainability and our resiliency and comparing that to not having a pretreatment step.
Okay.
Yeah. And it seems like those don't align very well.
Okay.
And I'm concerned about it. But it's administrative controls, right? We do the budget and that stuff. So I just want to put it so I can put it out there, I think. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we haven't gone to full design yet.
Yeah.
That closes
March 1st.
March 1st.
Request for statements of qualifications.
So yeah, we're soliciting for a design team.
Okay.
And given the dollar amount, we're making project specific to the plan, making it competitive.
Yeah.
And to just we'll wrap it up in March, but I don't know. I think we could try and figure out some ways to, yeah, incorporate input during the design period for sure. Yeah,
right.
I think we can come before we do that. That makes sense.
Yeah. Well,
so when we go out for the design team, we're providing them a RFP, which lists what our preference is for the plan based on the work Jacobs did.
Yeah. So. So we're selecting based off SOQ.
Mm-hmm.
We did make it project specific, so we're not using the pre-qualifying language in the procurement code that we updated this year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not an RFP in its sense that it's yeah, they're writing to a project.
Okay.
I think they provide an approach in the clause.
Yeah, so we...
Okay.
Help me with the scoring criteria, Jess. We have like a vision, approach, understanding section. We have a project team, firm qualifications.
Yeah.
And then we have a smaller section for references.
Yeah. Of like unique more.
Yeah, we tailored it specifically to try and have folks highlight a challenging water source like we have in the Weber Basin, the seasonal organics.
Yeah. Is it is it live? Are they?
Oh yeah,
it's live.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. So now it's on the street. We've had two letters of interest because we're coming up on a question period. We had enough time on this one that you know, we wanted to accommodate, you know, any questions to go to the group, have a level playing field, and then we gave ourselves the option to conduct interviews before we select, and we can adjust for them while we do that. And we also have a long enough period that I think as a scoring team, we can track down those references as a group, which I think will be helpful. So we have at least 2 weeks to scrub those down before we finalize scoring.
What would be the appropriate time to bring up Mike's concern? So I have the same concern. I'm hesitant without the pre-treatment. I like the idea of that for wildfire reasons and others.
I think everybody will be pretty hesitant, yeah, especially our ops folks, okay. Brandon and the team.
Well, that's really disappointing.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, I think, you know, after we get a consultant on board to do the design,
we'll lay out a design schedule. And I think there could be some, like, we could pick out some good milestones. And we could even do some workshops. I think there's some creative ways we could, right. we could get the.
So we won't bring this back to you until April.
Yep. So we'll, yeah, exactly. So yeah, we'll be looking for, you know, similar. I think we'll use the same approach for the purchase order. That's, I guess we haven't handled that all out yet, but internally we'll evaluate the SOQs, select a consultant. Andy appoints the selection committee. It's probably going to be at least a group of four. After which, we'll get billing rates. Andy can negotiate if necessary, but we're selecting quals, not billing rates. Then we can start hammering out a scope of work like we did with the Jacobs Welcome Asset Management. And then we can really start to quantify schedule deliverables. When's the appropriate time to get these? Give the input. When are we going to have the workshops? When are we involving the plant staff?
Is it centered around taking Jacob's work to the next step? So are we, have you thought about the mow it down and start over alternative? Because I heard the other night that there's some other hydraulic issues.
Right.
It's not just the clock shear.
Sure.
And that there's other.
Yeah, so it was evaluated at a high level by the Corolla folks, and they essentially concurred with all the high level decisions that were made by the district and the Jacobs team at this point. So that would not to be going the direction of bulldozing the plan and starting over.
What would that cost be?
Well, logistically, I just don't know how that's possible, but
we could take Park City to treat the water, we'd buy it back.
Yeah, we physically can't receive the amount of water we would need.
Okay, there are system limitations in doing that.
I guess, yeah, hydraulically not possible. And it's current state, I mean.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was at a high level not evaluated as a feasible option for prison.
That's out of my scope.
Well, not necessarily.
But it just, right, I'm familiar with, you know, we used to be able to build treatment plants for a dollar a gallon, and then it's maybe two, and now it might be three, and if we're looking for five, that's 15 million.
Yeah, but look at, but also, it's great if you have a flat piece of ground in the middle of nowhere, but think of the location. So we have, just like the tank up in Summit Park, the shape that it had to take on to achieve it, and I don't know what the price per gallon was on that. It's not a dollar a gallon. It was $10, $11.
Yeah, and architectural treatments, and yeah, it was
different. Right. So if you add where the location is on Signal Hill in Promontory, there's that factor before you even consider everything else that we need to do to accomplish.
Yeah.
Right.
Before we can't allow that billing. Prevent us from like potentially doing pre-treatment.
No. But our geography, we're gonna have to be creative on how we do that in the limited space.
It sounds like the question of are we throwing good money after bad? The answer to that was everybody thought of that, and it's not.
Well, we are throwing good money after bad, but we don't have a choice because we're constricted based on property, and we can't get water to anybody in any other way, like. Or the vacant lots next door for sale.
Yeah, no, the promoter is a factor.
You know what? I know somebody who would totally sell his lot up there. He is on lot 12. But...
And they're not for sale, but they are vacant.
Yeah. I think somebody's building on 11. I think only 13 and 12 are possible.
Stop. What's the one that's right next to us on the front if you're on the road?
That's 13, and then 12 would be right next to that.
I don't think deeply about much of anything. I look at easy solutions, and there's two lots next door that are everything's for sale, man.
It just takes money.
Yeah.
Simple.
Time and money.
Okay, well, thank you for letting me splash around.
Follow-up question. I want to keep this going. Sorry. So if we're not going to see this as a board until April, at that point it's to approve a PO.
We can slow this.
That's our grounds. Like, your board's kind of telling you that they have some significant concerns. Do we want, if we wait that long and then the board's misaligned with recommendations, is that going to cause a problem? I mean, we want to get this kind of in the pipe and moving as fast as possible. I'd hate for us to throw a wrench in all your plans in April.
Sure. So logistically through the procurement process, is there anything that would prevent board members from sitting on the selection?
No.
So if you want to participate from that level on, I mean, there's no hard and fast that we have to get it done in April. It could be May. It's got to go through its complete design phase. And then, I mean, logistically, I think we're not, as soon as we would even contemplate doing something is 28.
Yeah, we built a preliminary schedule and put it in the RSOQ to come on peak season 2028. So essentially finish 26.
That was part of avoiding the over an 8% increase, right? Right.
Timing when
yeah, it was something like that with bonds falling off the. Yeah,
if we did it at the same time, we're gonna have to have like a 10%+.
But part of the logistics of it too is, as we make these improvements, making sure they work. So we don't want to go into the peak season and have something fail. We'd rather ramp it up in the winter, making sure everything works the best we can. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to, so there's a couple of other levers in there as well.
In the process, yeah.
Yeah, and then line. as we treat water and have to discharge it, we're going to have to find a place to put that in the winter. I mean, we already have challenges sometimes with the promontory ponds, they get full. So all of that kind of has to line up as perfectly as we can. But with permission of the chair, you can set committees. And if you want to be part of that, there's nothing. We haven't ruled anything out.
Yeah, certainly. So yeah, if there's concerns around design and approach, I guess from my perspective, I don't know how that would derail selecting the most qualified person to help us with the design. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I don't see a problem with that step. I think it's between that and, yeah, generating a final PO that you're going to action and start moving ahead with.
Yeah. Okay, on the design piece.
Yeah.
All right, yeah, let me...
Sorry, the PO that we're going to see in May is for designing plan with a predetermined kind of process for
implementing
treatment start. So that's where that PO will incorporate whether we have pretreatment or not. It'll essentially lay out.
No.
Okay.
So the PO will be for the. So the PO will incorporate the work that will take place in 2024.
The
SOQ process allows us to select the right design consultant to get us from start to finish on building the actual project. So again, we're gonna select based on qualifications. At that point, put a scope of work together to get us through 2024.
And scope of work would outline what the preferred approach is for
design. We would need to select the preferred approach via the work. So after having the scope of work in place, the PO approved, then we can actually start the design work and get it in the nitty-gritty of like, hey, are we really going to look, are we going to do the bench testing, look at direct filtration? Are we going to? Because all this stuff we're going to prove out on the bench at a pilot level before we even take it into the design phase. But in order to do that work, we need to select the person to work with and put that in a scope of work.
How much of the existing facility could be repurposed? Like, are the GAC contactors, are they, could you reuse those?
And if you plant them,
then mow it down.
Oh, mow it down.
And reuse those GAC contactors and reuse your membranes and stuff like that.
Got it. So in the mow it down scenario, we're moving where the plant's located.
Mm-hmm.
So we're taking the plant offline for the construction period.
You'd have to come up with a temporary debottlenecking delivery. Park City water.
Yeah, that's a, well,
easier said than done.
Yeah, no, that's really challenging thing to do. I mean, we're, that'd be a project ours.
Well, politically wise.
No, I mean, it's certainly possible, but you'd be looking at building a new transmission line or pump station infrastructure all the way from Park City to Mountain Regional.
I thought regionalization would have helped with that.
Yeah, so the hydraulic limitation of the Highway 40 system taps out around 1,000 gallons a minute.
Okay. Without adding a booster and other infrastructure. So mowing down the building, there's going to be a cost. Reconstructing, there's going to be a cost, and then then getting Park City to treat. Yeah. You may triple your cost in doing that. But so, you know, is it cost? Is it?
Yeah. But just for perspective, like, let's say this idea, we can't get 1,000 GPM through this highway boarding system that we don't own or have that allocation.
It's like 1.5 MGD.
But let's say that. Yeah,
we need 5. It's not cutting it. That 1,000 help. That, okay.
And then the other thing, the backup.
And then we have no way to pump that water to Promontory Service. This water is coming from a different spot now. We're getting it in the Atkinson zone. And the plant's at the top of Promontory. So we're,
okay, this helps.
And now, so we're talking about a transmission system back to the existing tanks that are at the top of the ridge line
and Promontory. And then think in the back of your mind, if we have to add different GAC for PFAS or another contractor. Right. So there's all of these variables.
But
right. And so does it, are you guys including allowance for a future PFAS reg?
Okay, we got up. Okay.
Very good.
But I will say Corolla, when they're kind of 50,000 foot level, they had some different ideas of where we could add extra gap. It's just how you get in the building.
Yeah. Okay.
There's some other, so there's a lot of moving parts, but happy to have you participate in the.
No, I think we can come up with a good way to do that and get that input. I think that's a really good comment.
Can you put the pond underground?
Before I can put the solar array on it.
Solar array is not built.
Yeah.
Where under, we have, I mean,
it's a $300,000.
I feel like the space limitation is just not appropriate. I mean, we need to think about all the ratepayers and the people we're serving, and I think hamstringing and, you know, putting a band-aid on a plant that's not performing and wasn't built correctly to begin with is just wrong. So I guess I don't like the excuse of, you know, we're space limited. I think we should come up with a solution just on that.
I think then you'd go to buy land instead of, or move, or totally, yeah, I mean,
does that,
if we just paid $4 million for a place to put our headquarters, what's $1 million or $2 million to put a plant? Quite honestly, where's our priorities?
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, because you were kind of challenging the building going in, I'm regretting not challenging that more. I feel like this plan should be our priority, not.
Well, this PFAS thing is. If we don't have it up there, I guess.
It's not in the surface. Not in the surface. Yeah.
That's the top one.
Yeah, let me think of a good way to incorporate that, but I think. And we can come up with some solutions.
Yeah, to me, it feels like good money after bad. I can't quite, but it's helping. So thank you to understand the.
No, I appreciate the
regionalization difficulties. And,
yeah,
it's you guys know what you're doing.
No, I think we're definitely kind of also, you know, it's important to think through. We've done a lot of the same things. And, if anything, it's probably like comes down to me communicating that better and giving better updates probably along the way. And, yeah, that's something I can try to improve on too.
So do we want in our next, because aren't our committee assignments coming up next month? Is that next month?
March.
On the, do you have the calendar? Yeah. I thought that was in March.
Annual elections.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So if we wanted to discuss creating another committee to address that, we can at least explore it.
Yeah. Just popped out in my head a couple ideas, you know, design workshops. We could have some board involvement, even this SOQ process is possible, but it just be good to have a little bit of time to think about it. And, you know, circle back.
Yeah. More catching you off guard.
No. But I think there's
always save the worst stuff to last.
We almost adjourned.
I don't know. I think we should be brought up though, because I don't think we should shortchange ourselves on this.
It's a huge step.
Too important.
It's a huge step, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think if it's something that keeps you engineers up at night, you know, I think we have to stand up and.
In fairness, and I'm just a geologist.
Also, you got lumped in to the architects and engineers.
Lucky. Thanks, Karen.
Oh. You know, my pleasure. All right. So are we ready to adjourn? Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Okay. We are adjourned at 7:28.